barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Monday, September 12th, after the craziest weekend of college football I can remember in a while. You talk about chaos. You talk about upsets. Fucking college football is the best, isn't it? From Alabama, Texas, being a nail-biter, a fucking just dramatic. You know, every side is going to argue now, right? The missed calls against Bama, the missed calls against Texas that Bama fans use to refute the missed calls against them. Just back and forth of an unranked Texas team down to an injured backup quarterback almost slays the beast. We will certainly talk about that. To Scott Frost gets fired because they fucking Nebraska loses. I mean, just App State beats Texas A&M. Marshall upsets Notre Dame. BYU upsets Baylor. Chris's fucking Final Four team. Let's not forget. Kentucky goes in and beats Florida against my pick, which is bullshit. Tennessee beats Pitt. Washington State beat Wisconsin.
Ugh.
What are we doing in college football right now? Just wild, wild times. But Chris, how are you this fine Monday? What a weekend, man. NFL football kicked off. This is it.
I'm really good, man. I got to watch Zone 6 ball out yesterday, man.
You did, didn't they?
Real ones know.
I'm telling you, all of them. Yeah, I hope you have the stat line. I mean, from Noah Brown, Curtis Samuel, Paris Campbell, Terry McLaurin, Michael Thomas, I mean, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. I mean, the NFL, Zone 6 took the NFL by storm. Yeah.
Did they all catch touchdowns yesterday?
Catch touchdowns, but they all had stat lines. It wasn't like one catch. It was like five catches for 80 yards, four catches for 68 yards. Like, they all made an impact, and they're all playing great. And so I was really proud. It seemed like every game I turned on, I'm like, hey, I coached him. Hey, I recruited him. It was fun. And my kids were enjoying it too. So yeah, they balled out. Shout out Zone 6.
Real ones know, man, because like the last two seasons, people seem to have forgotten that Michael Thomas is one of them ones. And so it was nice to see him back out there. Just because we called him a top five receiver on the show. People were at our fucking necks for like a week straight. Yeah.
They forget how good he was, right? And that's what it is. That's what happens. It's, you forget about how good someone is when you haven't seen him for a while. And so it was great to see him get in the end zone twice. And I had him on my fantasy team. By the way, I'm looking to go 4-1 in my five fantasy leagues, our Menace general tier fantasy leagues. We have two of them. I'm going to catch a dub in both of them. So the only game I'm going to lose, my team put up like 150 points, and I would have beat any other team in the whole league. But the guy, one of my best friends from high school I'm playing, his team put up like 178. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what am I supposed to do with this steroid team?
Yeah, what can you do? Yeah, no, Michael Thomas is one of them ones. My fantasy teams, I think I'm going 1-1. I beat up on our boy Austin. Whooped on him. I'm going to beat him by probably like 50 by the time it's all said and done. But Zach, let's talk about some football. I want to throw up the super chat, then we're going to get into the show. How about SBC 2-0 versus top 10 in Wisconsin, or Washington State over Wisconsin? Do you think the transfer portal is evening out the competition? We're going to talk about that a little bit later because I certainly think so.
It is. I mean, you look at, I mean, not to jump ahead in the show, but the receiver that Arkansas State brought in and he cooked Denzel Burke, really cooked everyone. He was an Oregon State transfer. I think that the transfer portal has allowed coaches to fill gaps immediately with some really good players. And I think it's worked both ways, where Alabama is going to get an embarrassment of riches. Jahmyr Gibbs is going to pop in the portal and they're going to take him. But also at the same time, these smaller schools are going to get really good football players that otherwise might not have, you might not have known about them because they're going to get a second chance at life at a place like Washington State. And all of a sudden, Washington State rolls in and beats Wisconsin. I think the transfer portal has just changed the landscape so dramatically, more so than NIL, more so than anything. And it's great. And I think it's awesome. I think it's great.
Yeah, no, I agree. But Zach, we got to talk about it, man. Our guy, Scott Frost, trying to get fired, bad about it. I don't know. Buddy can't do anything right.
How bad do you have to be that a school is willing to give you $8 million just to have you leave 3 weeks early? Like, if they had waited 3 weeks, they could have saved $7.5 million. How bad is it that they couldn't just endure three more? I mean, they've already endured years of this miserable tenure, and it clearly is not getting better. They clearly were going to have to make a move. But I said last week, after their week one loss, they should fire him immediately. And people were at my neck. What the fuck is the buyout drops October 1st. Guaranteed he won't be fired before then. Not so fast. He's out of there. Up out of there. Paid and all. And Scott Frost secured it. He said, fuck it. If I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down with a max check. And Scott Frost threw the game. Threw it.
But I thought they were going to be one of the elite teams in the Big Ten.
I really thought they would have they'd fight for Scott Frost, but just from people that I know and people that are familiar with the program, he's an arrogant motherfucker. Just pissed off boosters, pissed off everyone, because he is Scott Frost, right? He's just, his ego is the size of the state of Nebraska, and that was the main issue there. But I do want to take a victory lap, Chris, because my guy, shout out to Marcus Washington. He had a day on Saturday. He had 123 yards receiving, over 20.5 yards per catch. He was balling for Nebraska. So keep an eye on him. I'm telling you, he's going to be a really good player. And, you know, it's been overshadowed by this Scott Frost debacle. But Scott Frost gave up 642 yards. Like, Scott Frost has a defense problem. It sounds like Georgia Southern turned it over twice. Nebraska didn't turn it over. And Georgia Southern still won. It's just unreal how bad his program is.
It's horrid coaching, and I'm surprised how quickly it came, because usually, like, in the Scott Frost era, kind of the big issue was, okay, like, the plays come crunch time, they end up botching. But this is kind of start to finish, they just do not look good at all. They look like there's the teams of fate, and then there's the teams of just, like, misery. Like, Nebraska is a team of misery under Scott Frost. And, Zach, I guess, firing him now, do you not risk him maybe beating Oklahoma?
Well, I mean,
because that would be the most Scott Frost thing to do.
Well, he's gone now, I think that's why they fired him, right? Is they knew that this was the move, and they didn't want something crazy to happen. Like, he beats Oklahoma, they get some support behind him, because they truly know that the direction of the program is not where they want to go. So the only thing you could do by letting him go on the field is all of a sudden get some fluke win and build a little momentum. And all of a sudden you're like, fuck, now we're kind of stuck with this guy, right? There's boosters and people on the board of directors that are behind Scott Frost because he turned it around. You don't want to give him that chance because you want to make a change. So that is why it was worth $7.5 million to them, because they said, fuck it, we don't want any chance that he can build a little support or momentum. We want to end it, cut the head off the snake right now, and move forward.
Can you feel when there's signs of, like, a dead man walking type feel, like when a coach is gone, but, like, still kind of working there? Because I'm sure it felt like to Scott Frost and everybody at Nebraska that at some, like, he was gone. It was just a matter of when, not if. Does that create a tough environment at work?
Oh, it's really tough. It happened. The only time I've ever experienced it in my career was at Florida, when Urban just randomly, like, resigned. Right. And we still had a bowl game to play. And so during bowl prep, like, all the coaches, it bizarrely changes your staff dynamics. Like, whereas everyone used to be meeting together, like, studying film, like, grinding, trying to win, all of a sudden Urban resigns and everyone's kind of in their office watching film. They're on their own, because ultimately they're trying to take care of their family. They're trying to find that next job. Like, fuck everything else. Like, they don't want to be thrown on the street jobless. So it changes the aura and the feeling inside that building immensely.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's kind of, and obviously it's not, you're not able to help and get things going the right way. I want to throw this up from Rod, because I think it's relevant to this conversation. For the 10, when a historic program goes a long time without success and goes through several coaches, at what point do you start looking at the administration as being the cause for the program's issues? Do you think Nebraska has an administration issue, Zach, or is this more of a Scott Frost thing?
Well, I mean, it can't just be a Scott Frost thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're, ever since they fired Frank Solich, they have been just on a downslide, year in, year out. And so at some point you have to look at the guys making the hire. But at the same time, anyone in the world would have hired Scott Frost, right? Any AD, any
coach. He was the hot job. He was the
one of the hottest names in coaching. And he's a legacy. Great player from Nebraska. Like, you can't say they got that hire wrong because anyone in the country was trying to hire Scott Frost. So hindsight's 20/20 always, right? So did they make a mistake hiring Scott Frost? Well, it looks like it, but you absolutely had to hire him back then. I mean, he took UCF to an undefeated season. They claimed a national championship. Like, he did wonderful things there, and he was one of the hottest names. Mm-hmm. So you had to hire him. It's a lot like right now. Okay, a lot of people are saying, would Urban Meyer take that job? Well, the answer is, I don't know. I mean, never say never, but I absolutely think no, he would never take that job. But you kind of have to go after him, right? Because of his track record of success. And like, if you can land Urban Meyer, that's program changing. And if it ends up being a failure, it doesn't mean you made the wrong move, right? They made the right move hiring Scott Frost. You had to hire Scott Frost, and it didn't work out. It's a lot like the Jim Harbaugh era prior to last year. You had to hire Jim Harbaugh. He was the prodigal son. He was the guy that you had to get him back at Michigan. And then last year, obviously, he gave some indication that that was the right move. But prior to that, you would have said epic failure. Like, he's got to go. And so you had to make that move with Scott Frost back then, and you had to fire him now. It's just the way it all played out. But so is there an administrative issue? Absolutely there is. From the time that they fired Frank Solich, you could tell that they were too high on their britches. It was a lot like, you know, some of these other programs. I'm trying to think, like when Glenn Mason was at Minnesota, he was going 9-3, 10-2 every year. And all of a sudden, Minnesota started feeling themselves like they were a great program, great destination. And so you move on from Glenn Mason and look where Minnesota's gone since then. You start buying into your own hype a little bit. And I think that's where Nebraska got. They didn't have an accurate depiction of the landscape and where they fit in it. Mm-hmm. So they're sitting here saying, fuck, we fucked this whole thing up. How do we get back?
The question for the chat, the first question for the chat is, by the end of this show today, is Scott Frost at the Nick Saban School of Rehabilitation? Like, it just feels like a fit to me.
That's where he's going, right? Unless his ego just is so big that he won't do it. That if he wants to become a head coach again at a big time place, he needs to go to the Nick Saban Rehabilitation Clinic. And it just seems like such a natural move.
Yeah, heard that. Who do you think is a fit for Nebraska moving forward? If you were the AD, the administration at Nebraska, who are you going after today?
Well, I mean, Nebraska has a defensive issue, right? I think you go out and hire an offensive coach, like people were talking about Tom Herman. Tom Herman would need to bring in a $2 million defensive coordinator, kind of a Jim Knowles-esque hire to get that defense right, because you give up 642 yards to Georgia Southern. Like, your issues are deep on defense. So I honestly think Jim Leonard is a strong candidate. The Wisconsin DC, I know they just lost to Washington State, but that was not because of defensive woes. He's one of the best in the game. I think hiring him as a head coach would be a strong move. I think that Matt Campbell from Iowa State would be a strong move. Luke Fickell's not taking that job, so don't mention his name. Urban Meyer's not taking that job. I don't think Tom Herman is the right move, but Tom Herman, if he gets a second crack at it, I'm sure would do things differently. So I wouldn't grade that a bad hire if they hired him. I just think they could take it in a different direction. I think Jim Leonard and Matt Campbell should be the two candidates that are looked strongly at, for sure.
You know who I like, who I watched do things with a program that's similar in size, or kind of similar in stature in terms of like college football, you know, supremacy? I think you call Gary Patterson.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, Gary Patterson is an analyst at Texas, and I shot him a message after the game because what they did to Alabama was, I mean, it was beautiful. And I have the all 22 coaches film. And if you aren't familiar with it on Patreon, the link is right below Chris. I do a coaches film session. It's, you know, last week broke down two different games, going to break down the Alabama Texas game this week. And also going to go back. I have the all 22 film for Ohio State Notre Dame. And I'm going to do an entire coaches film breakdown of where CJ Stroud still needs to improve, because there's some reads he's making that you don't see on film, like kicking a bubble screen when they have numbers on the run game, things that he's doing that he could take this offense to another planet if he can improve, and kind of give you an insight into what are the meetings like, what is he being told? What is Ryan Day telling CJ Stroud? So that those videos will come this week. If you're interested, the link is below Chris, and it's in the bio. But yeah, it's so different when you watch coaches film. I'm so glad I got it done and I have copies of this now, because I'm going to be able to give insight to college football fans that no one else in the world is giving.
Someone said, let's get some Brett Bielema in there in Nebraska.
Oh, God.
But also, Matt Rhule.
He's got Illinois playing well.
Yeah, he does. He does. But also, Matt Rhule, if Matt Rhule doesn't end up kind of working out, because well, he was kind of
shout out to the Browns. Browns gang getting that dub over Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, man. I mean, what? Plus,
rookie kicker hits a 58-yarder. Ice.
Cade York. I drafted him, I think, in all my leagues. 16 points. Look at him go. Look at the rookie go. Ice in his veins. But, I mean, he kicked for a national championship, so. I mean, that's one of them ones. That's the guy. That LSU team, that 2019 LSU team is full of just NFL dudes. Players, literally dudes everywhere.
All right, before we move on to the Bama Texas breakdown and kind of my thoughts, I did want to mention one of our partners, Prize Picks. If you haven't went and checked them out yet, I encourage you to do so. Promo code Menace, and they'll do a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with our promo code. But it's badass. You got to check it out. So it's daily fantasy where you make different entries on player projections, and you just have to pick, like, will they have more or less than 50 receiving yards? Right? You can put these two, you pick 2 to 5 players and project what they will do on the football field, right? It's truly like fantasy football, but betting, and you can win up to 10 times your money on an entry. It's fucking awesome. I started doing it last week and I'm addicted to it now. So we're going to bring our Mensa on Friday to give you his daily fantasy picks, and you can take those with Prize Picks and put them all together and get a 10 time payout. It's awesome. So all you have to do is download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, sign up and play daily fantasy sports. Like I said, you get a free deposit match up to $100 using promo code Menace. Go check it out. I wouldn't tell you it was fucking awesome if it isn't. It is badass. Go check out Prize Picks right now and start having fun, man. Fantasy football money. Who the fuck doesn't want to play that?
Zach, I want to move ahead a little bit. We're going to hit super chats a little bit later in today's show, but we will hit this actually. We'll use this to kick off kind of where we're at. When was the last time a team unranked Texas lost a game they should have won and get ranked the next week? Thank you, MC, for the 5. This is perfect because we're going to talk about Texas and Bama, and I can't believe I'm saying it or asking even the question. Did Sark outcoach Saban?
So that's a question for the chat. Did Sark outcoach Saban? Because, I mean, the reaction show on Saturday, if you haven't seen it, I gave my thoughts. Texas won that football game. Fair and square, they won it. And the refs clearly wanted Alabama to win. But I always have said, that's a part of the game. Like, you always have to beat the refs in games like that. And Texas should have, right? The stat of the game and why Texas didn't win that game is they got in the red zone 5 times and walked away with 1 touchdown. You can't go 20% touchdowns in the red zone and beat Nick Saban. You can't. Fuck the refs. Fuck the missed calls. That Alabama defense showed up in the red zone. When shit gets tight quartered, this Texas offense just couldn't score. And I'm going to go through the film in the coach's film session later tomorrow. But that was the reality of it. But you look at kind of my preview. I gave you the blueprint, how you beat Nick Saban, right? You have to throw the ball on Alabama's defense, and you have to protect the football. And you look at what Texas did, almost 70% completion percentage, almost 300 yards. They didn't throw touchdown passes, kind of getting back to that red zone issue, and they didn't turn the ball over. That's why they almost won the game, because they stuck to my blueprint. Fucking Sark watched the video. He did what I know you have to do, right? And here's why I know Alabama lost, no matter what happened. Alabama had 12 missed tackles. Texas had 6. The only way you win a game like that is if the refs fuck you. Honestly. But the other side of this, Chris, is Bryce Young is a phony. He is not as good as people want to crack him up to be. And I've been saying this all year last year. He won the Heisman by default last year because there was really nobody else to win it. Although
CJ losing that Michigan game really is kind of
cemented it. And even deeper than that, because ESPN drives so much fucking money down the SEC's throat, and that's their cash cow. That's why he won it. But Bryce Young in this game was 0-for-3 on deep balls. 10 of his 39 attempts were over 10 yards. Only 10 of 40. So 25% of his throws were throws over 10 yards, and he was only 50% completion percentage on those. He only attempted 5 throws outside the hashes or deep, and he went 1-for-5, 20%. He was 85% completion percentage when he was kept clean. He was 33% completion percentage when he was under pressure. He was 78% completion percentage versus base defense. He was 50% completion percentage versus blitz. He has all the indications of a fraudulent quarterback. but he made one play. So people will tout him as a back-to-back Heisman winner. One play. It was a massive play. Massive play. He avoided a tackle, missed tackle, got a first down, kept him alive, won the game. You have to make those critical plays to be thought of as a great player, to be a Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback. That's where CJ Stroud lacks that play right there. But on all the other plays, on when he's playing pure quarterback, CJ Stroud's a better passer. He's a better quarterback. And CJ Stroud isn't even at his ceiling. He's just scratched the surface, right? It just is what it is. And you can listen to me now or later say he was right. I'm telling you, Bryce Young is fraudulent.
For me, Bryce Young is really interesting because, like, in terms of like pure quarterback play, if I put it on a map and kind of you chart his throws, what you've done, nothing really pops out at you. But then, Zach, when you watch the game, whenever there's a game in doubt, he makes those. He gives you those five or six it plays. Like, he's out there playing backyard football, flushing to his right, scrambling for things. It doesn't look like he processes information very quickly. It doesn't look like he's pinpoint accurate as people may need you to believe, or else his receivers would be more productive. Simple fact of the matter is it feels like he needs big windows to throw in, which is why a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs is the leading receiver for them, because that's
all you need to know, right? This Alabama receiving core is not national championship caliber. And I'm not saying that Alabama won't be the national champion at the end of the year. But right now, what I've watched from these receivers, it is not screaming to me like explosive weapons everywhere. Jahmyr Gibbs is a great player.
Great player.
Obviously, he's the leading rusher, leading receiver. They just feed him the ball. But with a Heisman caliber quarterback and above competent receiver play, you should see more explosive plays from Bryce Young. You should. I mean, you look at this game, Texas was 1-5 in the red zone, 25% on third down. They only ran it for 2.4 yards per carry, and they should have won the game. Imagine when Bama faces a team that can convert some third downs, that can run the ball a little bit better. And not to take away from what Alabama's front is and does, because they're a really good front seven, but Texas stuck to the plan of how to beat Nick Saban, and Alabama helped them, right? They were penalized 15 times for 100 yards and should have been penalized 20 probably. Their Alabama wideouts are awful. They just are. Bill O'Brien is a dog shit offensive coordinator. What I watched on Saturday, the game planning, the play calling, huge step back from Steve Sarkisian, and the coach's film room session tomorrow is going to go through all of it, the why. But Texas found real liabilities in Alabama's defense. Kyree Jackson and Kool-Aid McKinstry they attacked him. I mean, six catches on eight targets for over 100 yards. They had major tackling concerns. Will Anderson Jr. missed four tackles. Jalen Moody missed four tackles. I'm not buying this Alabama hype right now. And I think Bill O'Brien was a mistake at OC, and they haven't recruited receivers. Holloman Wiggins needs to answer. Call him to the podium. What the fuck is going on? You're Alabama. How is this what you're rolling out there at receiver?
Put him on the stand. Is it me, Zach? Am I out of pocket here? Or are there times where it feels like Bryce Young is not well coached? Because a couple of those points late in the game, like, he took that safety essentially. Like, that's got to be a coaching point. You got to get that ball out or make a decision quickly. He did not. Additionally, even on that run that kind of sealed the game, was able to get the yards for the field goal kick, he basically took a sack there and got fortunate that Ryan Watts never learned how to wrap up in his time in Columbus. Like, those are two coaching points you think, like, wow, he got away with these mistakes, not because he did anything exceptional, but because the talent on the defense wasn't able to get something done.
Right. And I mean, you look at Quinn Ewers, what he did, and you know, you could play the what if game all the time, kind of like back when Colt McCoy was the quarterback and got hurt, right? Quinn Ewers is special. And I watched some of these throws. I posted one on Twitter because I have the coach's film now. He's unbelievable. He really is. He is what he was hyped up to be. I mean, he started the game 9 of 12 for 134 yards. Bryce Young passed his yardage total in the fourth quarter before he got knocked out in the first quarter, I think after two drives or three drives. And he's only going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. He'll probably be back for that Oklahoma game, which will be a massive coming out party for him, because I truly believe had he not gotten hurt, this would have been his coming out party. I think Texas wins the game if he's the quarterback, and I think he throws for 400 yards. And I think everyone is saying, you know, touting again, back to my point, that if you throw the ball well on Alabama, you can win the game. And, I mean, they had a one-legged backup quarterback out there who almost won the game in Hudson Card.
How much of this, Zach, is about Texas? This is their Super Bowl. They've been game planning the entire offseason for Bama, and they just caught them. Is that a thing, or is this Texas team that good? Because it felt like Sark kind of set them up. Because, you know, the week before, Zach, Quinn Ewers, like, over 50% of his passes were at or behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they got to Bama, they aired that thing out.
They did. And I think, you know, you show what you need to show in that first game, and they didn't need to show shit. Right. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that, you know, it was game planning for Bama. That's no different than anyone does in the country. Like if Ohio State played Notre Dame week two and Arkansas State week one, you would have saw the bare minimum Jim Knowles defense against Arkansas State, just waiting to unveil it in that massive matchup. They didn't need to unveil their full Quinn Ewers offense in week one. They needed it ready and available against Bama. And that's what they did. And unfortunately, I mean, the kid got driven into the ground in an unsportsmanlike roughing the passer play. And we had to watch the rest of the game with a hobbling backup quarterback playing.
Yeah. Quinn is special. It was a joy. You know, I talked to, you know, the chat would give me shit every day this offseason. I talked about Quinn Ewers wants a show. And it was like, he better be good or else we're not going to let you live this one down. Do you think Texas deserves to be ranked after that loss, Zach? Yes. Circle back to the question. Yes. Where would you rank them at?
I would put them about 15.
Okay.
You know, there's rankings are stupid, but yeah. I mean, they played out of their mind. And the most impressive thing was how their front played, how their lines played. I mean, they went toe to toe with Bama. Bama's got a fucking really good front seven. They have a really good offensive line. We'll say good offensive line. And Texas went toe to toe with them. And that was the biggest question mark I had, is that their line play and how fundamentally sound they would be defensively. They didn't miss tackles. They were where they were supposed to be. I mean, they played lights out. They absolutely are one of the best 15 teams in the country.
Yeah, definitely a really good team. I'm excited for Sark moving forward. Sark feels like he could have something here moving forward. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but Sark feels like he's got it. Got something at least. Little Fleazy, thank you for the five. Go Bucks. Will Day's hesitation to lean on the run game cost him? Why bring in Fry? We'll touch base on that a little bit later. We're going to talk Buckeyes, but we do appreciate the five. Andrew Johnson, thank you for the five. Did Sark outcoach Saban? Me. Is fire hot?
I mean, he did it. And I will tell you, it just goes to show you the amount of respect college football coaches have for Nick Saban. When Steve Sarkisian, after the game, said his goal was to just put something on the field that Nick Saban would respect, right? He just wanted to have a product on the field that Nick Saban would look at him after the game and respect him as a coach. You talk about, like, that's daddy vibes, right? Like, I want to make my daddy proud. And kind of a bitch move by Sark to say that. Like, fuck Nick Saban. I'm trying to beat his ass. Yeah. Like, I don't give a fuck if he respects us. I'm trying to win. But it goes to show the level of respect that these coaches have for him.
Yeah, that's deep reverence for him. All right, Zach, now to the other school in Texas, Texas A&M. I don't know if you saw on social media, they had some shit to say about Texas Bama. They said, sorry, Texas, only Big Brother gets to beat Bama. And then what did Texas A&M go on and do? Lost to App State. Zach, they spent $30 million just to trot out Haynes King out there. What the hell?
Like, I said it when dumbass Desmond picked them to win the national championship. You can't – now, you should be able to beat fucking App State. You should be able to beat them with Haynes King at quarterback. But you ain't winning a championship. And that's why guys like Desmond Howard are so fucking stupid. Because they pick a team because they read a bunch of articles in the offseason about a recruiting class and NIL deals. And it's like, oh, I'm going to pick them. I think they'll win it all. And you scratch your head and look at it like, with who at quarterback? Haynes King is not winning a fucking SEC championship, let alone a national championship. And then you look at the program. I mean, they had 11 missed tackles. Appalachian State had one missed tackle. That might be the lowest total I've ever seen. They missed one tackle the entire game. But national champs, Haynes King throws for 97 yards on App State. He completed one pass over 10 yards on Appalachian State. He went 25% on third downs against Appalachian State, but they're going to beat Bama? What the fuck is wrong with people? I called that they beat Bama last year. Far different football team. They are not going to beat Bama. Honestly, Jimbo Fisher might get fired after this year. They might end up 500 and Jimbo's looking for a fucking job. That's where they might be heading.
Is he a fit for Nebraska? I just fuck with you.
Sure.
Zach, on this Appalachian State game, it's ridiculous. I don't know if you saw, I kind of ran this by pre-show. Appalachian State ran 82 plays. Texas A&M ran 38. App State had the ball for 41 minutes. Texas A&M, 18. Zach, is this a case where because like Jimbo Fisher's offense may be archaic, and they have Haynes King out there, which I don't know why he was ever ranked highly at all, because he doesn't like his mechanics look bad. He looks very, very small, doesn't like he's processing information. He's not as athletic as everyone made it seem like. Zach, has the game passed up Jimbo? Because it feels like he's willing to do all the stuff in the NIL, all the stuff in recruiting. They have the Evan Stewart kid, who to me, I compare to Jameson Williams. He's that fast and freaky. They have some players out there, and yet still, that's the offense. That's the quarterback they tried out there, and they get beat by App State.
Well, all that money spent, they should have taken all that NIL money and went and paid for a big-time quarterback. It blows my mind. I know you need defensive ends. I know you need Shamar Stewarts of the world. You need those freaky Will Anderson Juniors. You need those players to win a national championship. But without a freaking elite quarterback, you stand no chance. So why spend all that money on all the talent to bring it in when you trot Haynes King out there at quarterback? Why? Mm-hmm. Like, save your money. Or put it all on a quarterback and try to win one with average talent and a great quarterback. It's just so misguided. There's no chance. You have to have a Bryce Young. You have to have a CJ Stroud. You have to have a Joe Burrow.
Go get Jaden Daniels when he transferred from Arizona State.
Something. Go get something.
I would have loved, like, I know we're not going to be able to get it, Zach, but you know what I want? I want footage of that quarterback battle that they had that was so hot. Because, I mean, members act, that it was like, oh, Connor Wegman looks really good. Like, Mac Johnson looks really good. We have a real quarterback battle on our hands. Well, we feel like whoever wins this battle is good enough to win a championship. And then they trot out their Haynes freaking King.
I said it in training camp when Jimbo came out and said that. It's still a three-horse race. If you think you have three quarterbacks that can win at a high level, you actually have none. Because no one has three national championship caliber quarterbacks on roster. Ohio State doesn't. Alabama doesn't. Clemson doesn't. Georgia certainly doesn't. Nobody does. So if you are 2 weeks into training camp and it's still a three-horse race, you're fucked. And we watched that live and in person on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. No. I mean, it's a mess. And now, Zach, Jimbo Fisher flirted a little bit hard with these boosters. Like, he's dancing. Like taking money from these boosters like this is dancing a little closer to the sun. Because then when you lose a game like this, it feels like a hot seatable offense, or maybe a fireable offense, because now boosters are directly involved. That $30 million is not a made up number. In fact, it's a little lower than what the dollar amount actually is. And those boosters expect winning, because winning is good for business. Zach, is he in some trouble now? Is this hot water?
That water's hot. It's no different than when you pay a coach over $10 million to get him to come to LSU or USC, right? The pressure is just intensified. When you get that kind of money committed to bringing you players, your job is to deliver wins for the boosters, right? If they don't spend $30 million on a class, they expect a national championship, and you better fucking deliver one. And if you don't, they're going to get you out, because if they're investing that kind of money to bring you talent, someone else can come in and win a championship. Someone can coach those kids up. And if you can't do it, what the fuck are you there for? What is Jimbo Fisher's value, right? It's not in recruiting, because they're paying for that to get done. It's not on the field. Fuck, he went 500 in the SEC last year, just lost to App State. What is Jimbo Fisher getting paid to do? He's only thing he's doing is fucking it up. Jimbo Fisher is in very hot water right now, and he's got to be, I mean, you better see a turnaround, and a turnaround fast. He better beat Bama. He better at least make it to Atlanta, because if he doesn't, his ass is on a short, short leash, and you're going to either see full staff overhaul or Jimbo's going to be gone.
You said it. I mean, like, he's got like a 1 year window to prove that he can get a good, you know, get something good out there, because they're not going to let him waste that $30 million. Because I mean, because Zach, they're going to roll in. And I mean, now their recruiting class now is not very good, because it's like, oh, like the money's a little bit dried up right now. We'll wait till we get it back. We're going to see what he does. So that class, ever so important. We'll see. Do you think he makes it through the season, Zach?
Well, you know, it's impossible to predict. We'll see how he does in SEC play.
Well, we will ask the chat what they think, since you don't want to predict. Do y'all think Jimbo Fisher makes it through the season with a job? Let us know.
I do think it's funny, though. All that offseason shit talking about Nick Saban, back and forth about recruiting. This motherfucker needs to shut up. I've said like Josh Gattis and all these coaches. Here's a piece of advice. Shut the fuck up. Do your job. That's all you got to do. Jimbo Fisher, shut up. Go do your job, because you're not doing your job very well. So stop popping off at the mouth. Like, you look like a clown.
Mm-hmm. Fact. And let's move on to one of those other guys that were kind of popping off a little bit to start the season. And we'll call this the cautionary tale of Marcus Freeman. Zach, okay. Notre Dame lost to Marshall. He's now 0-3 to start his coaching career, 0-2 if you want to leave off the Oklahoma State game. This is not how you want to start your tenure at Notre Dame. Did Notre Dame just mess this one up from start to finish?
Well, it's not going to get better. As I said, I saw news, Tyler Buchner's now going to be out for like 4 months or three months. He's done for the year. So now you're on a backup quarterback, and this is really, really bad for Marcus Freeman. I mean, he starts his tenure 0-3, and this is where Marcus Freeman needed to have a solid year. He didn't need to beat Ohio State. He needed to go 10-2 and have a solid year because his recruiting prowess is there. But starting your tenure 0-3, losing your quarterback, now he's going to end probably 6-6 on the year. Having that type of year, you could take recruiting prowess and throw it out the window. That shit ain't very hot when you walk into a high school in December and your team was awful. You started 0-3. You lost to fucking Marshall. Like, it is a bad day for Marcus Freeman. There is no recruiting prowess anymore. That's why he needed to take that recruiting momentum and have a solid year to get Notre Dame to level up. And he didn't. I mean, you look at this game, both teams were decently coached. Both teams had single digit missed tackles. Both teams were 4 of 13 on third down. It was a defensive battle, right? The difference is Notre Dame turned it over 3 times. Marshall didn't. You lose when you do that. And that comes down to coaching, right? The interceptions, the fumbles. Like, you can't do that against anyone in Division I college football and expect to win the game. So this Marcus Freeman tenure is turning out to be fucking horrific. And I don't know how he turns it around at this point, because now recruiting is going to fall off. He's on his backup quarterback, and his starter wasn't even that good. He had a chance to be good in a year, right? So now how bad is this backup quarterback going to be? I honestly think that this is going to end up being an epic failure for Notre Dame. And it goes back to my point, kind of like when Florida State hired Willie Taggart. Like, and why did we think Marcus Freeman would be a good head coach? I knew he would do well in recruiting, but what indication was there that he was a great football coach? He ran Luke Fickell's defense at Cincinnati, and they were successful. Luke Fickell's defense, by the way, got to Notre Dame, and their defense didn't improve, and then they handed him the head coaching job. Like, why did we think Marcus Freeman was going to be a great head coach?
Yeah, this is a cautionary tale, because this feels like a case. Now, I know, week two, but we think it's okay to react like this after a loss to Marshall, given the fact that you're Notre Dame. He was there for 1 year as the DC. No drastic improvement to the defense, but he's young and kind of that young, hot coaching kind of deal that kind of picked it up. Please, to all schools, stop using Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day as the rule, because it is the rule.
But it is the rule if you look at it. Ryan Day came in and revolutionized an offense, right? He brought it up to speed in this day and era and started putting out dominant offensive performances. So you saw him enhance and improve, and you saw his value directly impacted on the field. You never
for
saw
multiple
that.
For multiple years.
Multiple years. Like, by the time Urban walked away, you knew Ryan Day was a great football coach. Now, could he be a head coach? That was yet to be seen. But Lincoln Riley, what he did with that offense under Bob Stoops, you knew he was a great football coach. Would he be a great head coach? That was the only question. You don't have any indication that Marcus Freeman was ever a great football coach. And I'm not saying he's not, but there was no indication that he was this next level coordinator that Notre Dame should hire a never before head coach, because he was so good at his craft, on his respected side of the ball. And then, you know, should he have kept Tommy Reese as the offensive coordinator? I talked about Tommy Reese in the offseason. I don't think he's a good offensive coordinator. I don't know why Marcus thought he would be. It's kind of looking like now I was right, Marcus was wrong. But those are the moves that a head coach has to make. And was Marcus ready to make that move? I don't know. Obviously not. And you need to be the head coach. You look at what Ryan Day did. Ryan Day got the head coaching job. And what did he do? Fired the defensive staff immediately. Made a change, brought in Jeff Hafley. Made a bad coaching hire in the defensive staff for 2 years. What do you do? Fire all of them, except for Larry Johnson, because you should never fire him. And brings in Jim Knowles. Like, Ryan Day is making head coaching decisions that indicate to you he is a legit head coach. Marcus Freeman has not yet.
Yeah. This is a case of way too much too soon. Zach, in a 2-year window, they took a group of 5 defensive coordinator and made him the head coach at Notre Dame, a top 8 job. Like, even if he is a good coach, that is way too much too soon. Scott Frost needed to go undefeated at UCF to get a job at Nebraska.
Well, you know, this is one of those moves that if it backfires like it looked like it is, mm-hmm. it's not just Marcus Freeman that's getting fired. Mm-hmm. That AD's getting fired. Like, everybody's getting fired. Like, they are cleaning house, calling the cleaners to come in. I mean, shampooing the floors, getting rid of any fucking evidence that any of those people existed at Notre Dame. That's how bad this could go if Marcus Freeman doesn't turn it around real fast.
Yeah, he simply has to, because, like, with this, because, you know, there's the tales of, like, you know, Ryan Days and Lincoln Riley, and people forget. It's also Mark Helfrich. Mark Helfrich, he was born on third base, too. Like he came in. He made it to a national title, and then what happened after that? The wheels fell off as soon as Scott Frost left, and this kind of fumbled. It fell apart. So this is what it looks worse than that, and I'm worried. It is a cautionary tale, because I think his, you know, coaching is a process, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you're climbing a ladder, and it feels like when you are, like, falsely launched upwards, you could see a very, very quick failure. So definitely needs to turn this thing around. Additionally, kind of the bad news with Buckner being out for the year, I want to use that to kind of segue into J.J. McCarthy. Zach, you look good against Hawaii.
Everyone looks good against Hawaii, but it will play out just like I said it would be play out, right? Jim Harbaugh is no idiot. He started J.J. against Hawaii, and he went out, I think he threw 12 passes. 12 passes. 11 for 12, 229 yards and 3 touchdowns. He looked great. He's the better quarterback. I don't know why we're still dragging our feet about it, but he's a better quarterback, and he gives Michigan the best chance to beat Ohio State. And that's the sole goal here. If Michigan loses a game before Ohio State, it's an epic failure on the program, right? Because there's not a team on this, on their schedule. They have the weakest fucking schedule I've ever seen. There's no way they lose a game before Ohio State. And with JJ McCarthy at quarterback, I think it gives them the best shot to beat a really good football team like Ohio State or a Georgia or whoever. I said it last year. I'll say it again. JJ McCarthy should be the starting quarterback. And if he's not, Jim Harbaugh is going to lose a couple games this year. And he's proving to you that he's never going to level Michigan up ever. They have hit the ceiling, and they will never break through.
Thank you, Brian, for the two. JJ McCarthy, the starting quarterback. Does he scare you?
I don't know if he scares me, but I think he's really talented. I got to see him play college football. I mean, what he did against Hawaii, woohoo, it's fucking Hawaii. They're literally probably the worst team in college football. But he scares me far more than Cade McNamara ever would.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, he's definitely a better quarterback than that. So J.J. McCarthy tried to commit, rumor has it, twice before he committed to Michigan. And now he was in that class with Kyle McCord. He's in that class with Tyler Buckner. Now, we saw Tyler Buckner play. He looks like he has some accuracy issues, you know, good young prospect, but doesn't look that good, doesn't look near as good as JJ. And obviously we saw he tried to commit to Ohio State. We took Kyle McCord instead. Zach, is this a rare case where both those schools made the wrong decision in turning away JJ McCarthy in order to get Tyler Buckner and Kyle McCord, or is it too early to even say that?
Well, I think, whoops, wrong one. This super chat came in just at the right time.
Perfect time.
If you looked at those three quarterbacks and their body of work, granted, Kyle McCord has played very little. He played the one game last year. CJ was out, and he's played mop-up duty otherwise. So I'm not ready to full ship Kyle McCord and say he's not a great quarterback. But from what I've seen, I don't think he is that elite level of quarterback that you need to win a championship. I think JJ McCarthy could be. JJ McCarthy has outplayed Kyle McCord and Tyler Buckner to date. So with hindsight being 2020, absolutely. As a Buckeye, you would rather have J.J. McCarthy sitting in the wings waiting to take over for C.J. Stroud next year. I think as of today, yes, that a mistake was made, that J.J. McCarthy would be a better player. But I understand why. Ryan likes a more pure passer. He likes C.J. Stroud. He likes granted, Justin Fields was a great athlete and could run it as well. But Ryan likes elite arms. He likes elite arm talent and accuracy and, and you know, strength. And that's what Kyle McCord is, right?
He's well, based on what we've seen, we thought he was that, but is he that? Because in the Akron game, he didn't display any elite level accuracy. And even in the Arkansas State game, there was no moment I was like, wow, damn, that was a really good ball. So was it a misevaluation of him?
Or a lack of development, which one of the two, right? Either he hasn't been developed or, you know what? They were wrong. They were wrong. And he wasn't as good a thrower as they thought. Now, the question then the question I will poise then is Devin Brown the answer? He's a true freshman. He gets a pass for this year. When he gets in the game, he's allowed to struggle. I watched Quinn Ewers last year struggle in practice film a bunch. And I'm watched him play against Alabama, and there's a marked, massive improvement from year one to year two. So Devin Brown's allowed to look just okay in year one. That doesn't mean he won't be exceptional in year two. So that is the real question. Is Devin Brown the answer? Is he the future? Because from what I've seen from Kyle McCord, he's not.
There's a guy down in Clemson that wears orange that I just keep popping on.
That's my answer. You already know my answer. If I'm Ryan Day, the day CJ Stroud declares is the day I'm on the phone with DJ Uyangale's dad. Big Dave, what's up, man? It's Ryan. What do you say we run this back and try to get your boy in the Heisman conversation? I'm just telling you.
Because then you know who's in the year after that? The Dylan kid.
Dylan Raiola. I honestly think that is the path for Ohio State. Unless Devin Brown turns out to be something, I think the path is go get a stopgap to get you from CJ Stroud to Devin Raiola and make it a Justin Fields-esque transfer. And I think DJ Uyangale will be that because he is getting majorly underdeveloped and underutilized and just looks like shit at Clemson. And it's not because of him. I watched that film. I broke that film down. It's bad.
Ooh, Kyle McCord. I don't know, man. We talked about it a little bit before the show. Like when Dwayne Haskins went in for mop-up duty, there were some throws where he was like, oh, shit. Like, that ball jumps out of his hands. And that's listen, in a perfect spot.
It's not just – I mean, he threw four passes, right? Mm-hmm. It's just –
Yeah, no, I'm more referencing the Akron game last year. Obviously, guys can have a lot of development and growth over
to his credit, like, that was his freshman year. You're allowed to look like that your freshman year. So the book's not written. This is just my opinion.
Our projections, right? Your projections.
My opinion and projection based on what I've heard and what I see.
No, that's 100% fair. All right, Zach, there was some SEC action. I'll throw this up here. Great timing again. AR-15 looked like a pellet gun slinging it against University of Kentucky. Do you think UF was overrated? I got this game wrong. I got this game 100% wrong.
Well, I got it wrong. And, you know, you base it off of one game because you had a one-game resume to see Anthony Richardson, how he improved as a passer. And he looked far better against Utah. Didn't even look like the same player, right? I mean, he was atrocious against Kentucky. I mean, he was worse than I remember him being last year. 14 of 35 is your stat line, 40% completion percentage. 2 interceptions and 0 touchdowns. He was 9 for 26 on dropback passes. So that means without play action and RPO, he had a 34% completion percentage. It's glaring when you see how bad he misses simple throws. He was 33% on throws under 10 yards. Those should be your high. I mean, he should be like in the high 80s. He completed one of every 3 short throw. His accuracy is wildly, wildly off. And he truly needs RPOs and run action on every play to get a guy wide open to give him a chance. He's unbelievably talented with his legs. And because he was so bad, you get inflated on Will Levis. Let me also say, Will Levis is not an NFL quarterback. I said it before the game, and I did accurately predict that. I thought Florida would win because it looked like AR-15 was better than last year. He was not, so I was wrong. I misprojected that. But Will Levis is no NFL quarterback. He was 13 of 24, 54% completion percentage, 1 touchdown to 1 interception. He was 12% completion percentage under pressure. We've talked about this a lot. Under pressure versus blitz, that's where you thrive. 12% under pressure. 55% of his yards, over half of his yards were hard play action and RPOs. 44% completion percentage on throws over 10 yards. Just stop it. Full stop. This is not an NFL quarterback. Stop telling me that, ESPN. He is not, and Kentucky will lose to Tennessee. Period.
So for Anthony Richardson, one of the things that you referenced is that he's not throwing the ball at all to his blind side, which means that we saw Kentucky kind of load up one side, and that's where the interceptions came from. And if you're not able to read a full field in the SEC in conference play, they're going to figure you out. These coaches are smart, and so that's either a coaching issue on Florida's part or that's a information processing issue for AR. Are there cases where, you know, playbooks are designed for only half field reads to kind of benefit someone's strengths, or is that just more kind of, is that more on the kid or more on the coach?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I mean, a lot of these plays, it's full field concepts. He's just more comfortable to his right, so he throws more to his right.
That's oftentimes
what it is, but it's also, you know, coaches will do things like that, like get throws in his face to get build some confidence before you start working full field reads. And you saw it. He missed some slants, some easy throws to his blind side yesterday or on Saturday that you're like, damn, this kid really fundamentally has a long way to go to even execute it at a decent level for college football, let alone any NFL aspirations. He has such a long way to go.
Yeah, no, I didn't agree with that. Will Levis, man, you know why he's ranked so highly? We talked about this again pre-show too. It's cool to watch Will Levis play quarterback.
He's kind of a baller. He's like a poor man Stetson Bennett. That's what he reminds me of. Like he makes funky throws, like makes plays. Like I get it. I get the aura around him, but he's just not a very good passing quarterback. That's just reality. No, and both can be true.
It's just cool, man. Like he looks and moves like Aaron Rodgers until that ball leaves his hands and you see where it's going. Like it just fucking feels like cool. It doesn't. That ball placement doesn't. I missed it a little earlier. Jimbo Fisher is trying to pay $15 million for five-star Malachi Nelson. Malachi Nelson is open to taking offers. I talked to an NIL guy from On3, and he said that that they won't offer those dollars until he decommits publicly. So we'll see how that kind of moves forward. Brian, thank you for the five. McCarthy looks elite and scary. Harbaugh's first elite QB. Well, that's Harbaugh's fault if that's his first elite QB. I'll say that.
What do you mean? I thought Shea Patterson was supposed to be elite. Shea Patterson was a five-star.
I mean, they get four and five-star guys all the time. Dylan Raiola will not start as a freshman. Thank you, Mr. P, for crushing my dreams and pissing in my Cheerios. Gee whiz.
Yeah, we'll see. A long way to go till that year.
I said, we'll see. We'll see. Oh, Zach, one of the takes I had from kind of over the weekend, after QB 1 and 2, the drop-off might be a bigger drop-off than any drop-off I remember in recent history. Because remember, Will Levis and AR were supposed to be QBs 3 and 4. And then maybe the TVD kid from Miami, but he also struggled.
Yeah, you got to let the season play out. But right now, there are two quarterbacks that I think are playing far better than anyone else. Mm-hmm. And then you have guys like, Hendon Hooker in there where they're just not playing at an elite level, but they're getting the job done, right? Like he goes and takes down Pat Narduzzi, beats Pitt as we predicted. And it was like he was full on display. They launched the motherfucker down the field. Now, do you know he attempted 10 deep balls? They launched it over 20 yards 10 times, and he only completed three. So 30% completion percentage on deep balls is not ideal. You want to be around 50. But then he's so limited in what they ask him to do because he launched it deep 10 times, but then 20 of his attempts were on short throws. Half his yardage came from RPOs and play action. Like they do a good job of utilizing his skill set. And, the crazy part about that game was Pat Narduzzi's defense was awful. They had 19 missed tackles.
I'm telling you, man, like this Pitt Tennessee, I mean, this Pat Narduzzi Pitt team the last 2 years, Zach, is not the Pat Narduzzi defense. No violence. They're missing tackles. Schematically, they're getting picked apart. Remember last year he wanted to take shots at Mark Whipple? When they average like 35 points a game, it's the defense that's been a problem. And I never thought I would say that about a Pat Narduzzi-led team.
Well, he hasn't grown with college football. He's stuck in 2014 Michigan State, and that's what they do defensively. And I think they really could use some evolution on his defense. But also, it comes down to recruiting and all of that. I just shout out to Desmond Howard
picking Pitt
to make the playoffs. Like, what the fuck are you
smoking? But picking Tennessee to win the game.
Like, what is he smoking? I want to know. Is it good shit? It must be really, really good weed, or maybe something crazy that I don't know about, like meth or something wild. Like, how do you think this Pitt team or that A&M team were going to level up and go to the playoffs? Just, I get it. It's for clicks. He's getting paid a lot of money. So maybe he's brilliant and knows what he's doing, but you could pay me a lot of money to look like a fucking clown. I'm not doing it.
Zach, if someone told me today, pointed the death beam at us and said, what are your QBs 1 through 4? I honestly believe in my heart of hearts, I might go CJ, Bryce, Hooker, and then Stetson Bennett.
Well, Stetson Bennett, I mean, from what we've seen so far, Stetson Bennett has, I mean, he's a different player from last year. So I don't know how you could argue against that. But he's got to do it for 12, through the whole season. I mean, it's far too early to evaluate these guys. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Can Stetson Bennett do this week in, week out? Is he really that good, or did he just have a couple good performances against some bad teams? That's the question that will be answered in the next 6, 7, 8 weeks.
It's looking like Ohio State and Penn State going to be a good game. Thank you, Derek, for the two. You know, last year, Zach, the longest rushing touchdown for Penn State was 7 yards.
I do. I did know
that. That's an absurd stat. I think it's going to be a good game. I mean, your 18th year, super duper senior, Sean Clifford. I mean,
his- I can't believe we're still going to break down Sean Clifford. I feel like I've, did he play against me when I was coaching? this is my fourth season, not coaching football. And this is his fifth season.
Yeah. So he was there. Yeah.
So he was there. Mm-hmm. Sean Clifford was at Penn State when I was coaching at Ohio State. That feels like decades ago.
That's crazy. And then he beat out Will Levis for the job. Then later on when Will Levis started pushing him. What a weird world. Thank you, John, for the 10. You watch SC much yet? I know weaker opponents, but this Caleb Williams is totally real deal. Very smart.
I'm telling you.
He's progressing a long way.
I haven't watched the Stanford game yet. I kind of looked at the analytics so that I could have some intelligence when and if someone asked. But I'm going to watch that game this afternoon. I think Caleb Williams could be the real deal. I think USC's defense is really good. I know they gave up 28 points to Stanford. I haven't looked at why, but I have studied the analytics. They only missed four tackles. So they're tackling well. They're doing well on third down, to my knowledge. And so if they have a defense, I think USC could be a national contender. I mean, they'll be in the conversation. They'll be on that landscape. They'll be on that front lawn asking if they can come in the front door. And you could not have said that about Oklahoma. You could not have said that about USC before Lincoln Riley. So I think USC might be legitimate.
Mm-hmm. No, I think so too. And I think this is an interesting point on quarterback development. Last year, you and I were both pretty critical of Caleb Williams and the growth that he went through and the lack of growth.
And he was a freshman.
Yeah, exactly. First of all, he was a freshman. And additionally, he was a freshman that they did not think they'd have to get ready that quickly. Because right. The idea going into the season was that Spencer Rattler, Heisman winner, QB1, he's the guy, no quarterback controversy at all. So Caleb Williams wasn't getting any of the first team reps then until they pulled the plug. So for him now, we've seen the priority be Lincoln Riley, get him ready. And I'm sure Lincoln Riley's heard the noise that he's not that good at developing quarterbacks and maximizing them. And so Caleb Williams is just that. He came in, there was no splitting snaps, there was no quarterback controversy. It's get him ready. He's a smart kid. He's a physically gifted kid. And he looks like next year's QB1, even though it is way too early.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. So we'll see. We'll see what happens on this landscape and what happens with USC. But I'm going to study that film. I'm going to try to get to all 22 too, so I can break it down in the coach's film room. I'm going to keep selling it because I'm just telling you, these coaches film room episodes, you will learn college football at an entirely different level. And I'm not touting myself as some genius, but I'm just telling you, if you watch film with me and I explain what I see and what's going on, you will walk out of that hour episode and say, holy shit, I know football way better than I did an hour ago.
I want to save this Noah Brown question for the end of the show, Zach. But right now I want to talk about the landscape of college football real quick before we get out of here.
Yeah.
It feels to me like the combination of NIL and the transfer portal is evening out the playing field. Because previously where places could stack elite depth and kind of sell kids on by year three and year four, you can come in and do a good job. Right now, the NIL stuff, since you're able to make money, you know, before that, it's like, okay, if I can bite early and crack early, then I'll stay here long term. But if I cannot, I will transfer out. And so really, coaches are at a tougher place where they have to, you know, evaluate talent at a better level, at a higher level, because talented guys will leave and go elsewhere. If we look around college football, some of the top quarterbacks are all transfer quarterbacks. Hendon Hooker, that's transfer. Caleb Williams, a transfer, kind of non-transfer. I mean, just around, like, that's how kind of the best players are. And now you're seeing it because no one team has looked super dominant. We watched Clemson struggle. Say what you will about Ohio State, we watched them kind of struggle a little bit, not look as dominant as last year. Obviously, we just watched Texas, who utilized the transfer portal immensely, take Bama down to the wire. It looks like the transfer portal and immediate eligibility is doing a good job and has things moving the right way in terms of leveling the playing field. Am I off by that, or do you think I'm on something?
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, you look at what Michigan did at center. They get the kid from Virginia. Virginia is fucking terrible. So this kid feels like he's an All-American center, played like it last year in the ACC, jumps in the portal, goes to Michigan, immediate starter at center, and the apex of their offensive line. I mean, it's you see it on all levels, right? You also see it. I mentioned that Ohio State has to go against Arkansas State, right? All of a sudden, Denzel Burke is getting cooked all over the field. Well, you look at it, who the fuck is Champ Flemings? Right? Because by the way, he cooked everybody, not just Denzel Burke. He got targeted 10 times and caught 10 passes for 105 yards. He got Cam Brown twice, Ronnie Hickman three times, Denzel three times. Denzel's were the worst of all 10, but that kid is a portal kid. He played at Oregon State last year and didn't really do much. He transfers into Arkansas State and now he's out here cooking Ohio State. Like, that never would have happened in the past, right? Denzel Burke would still be this, you know, thought of in high regards and still would have played the whole game if they didn't have that kid at Arkansas State, because he just had a skill set that was better than anyone that Notre Dame had. And so the transfer portal is absolutely, not only is it leveling out the landscape because teams like Arkansas State can get that kid from Oregon State, Texas can revamp. We saw what with Kenneth Walker III and the slew of transfers that Mel Tucker got. And he's doing it again, by the way. Michigan State's 2-0, has looked well, played well in two games. It absolutely is making those teams level up, but at the same time, Ohio State is getting a Tanner McAllister, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at all these teams. Alabama's getting Jermaine Burton's and getting Jameson Williams. Like, everyone is leveling up, and it's truly a different era in college football. It is. And you look at Chris, you look at the national landscape. Did you know, Chris? Did you know the best division in college football, the Big Ten East, is the only division in college football that is right now currently still undefeated? The Big Ten East is 14-0. The SEC West, the vaunted SEC West, is 12-2 after A&M lost and to fucking App State.
And a transfer quarterback. Chase Price was the quarterback at Clemson.
Absolutely. And so just you look at the landscape, and it's you're starting to wonder, like, the SEC's been the best conference in college football. We know that. But with the transfer portal, could that be something that changes overnight? And all of a sudden, you know, the Big Ten one year is better than the SEC. And then the portal hits, and all of a sudden it's the ACC. Then it's the SEC. Because these so many players moving, it's no longer just who recruits the best. Because you can recruit really well. And if four of those kids transfer somewhere else, those recruits didn't matter. You could look at recruiting rankings all day long.
Yep. No, I agree. It's a tricky situation. And it's created already in the first 2 weeks, Zach. Absolutely madness in college football. And that's what I'm so here for, because no one looks elitely dominant across the board, with exception of maybe George. But even then, I'll argue that they have their own deficiencies to deal with as well. Yeah. So moving forward, I think this will be the most interesting season of college football to date as we wind down the college football playoff era. So shout out to college football and NCAA for accidentally stumbling into a very entertaining league.
Right.
I got nothing left for today, Zach. Got anything else you want to hit?
No, I appreciate everybody. Wait.
The Noah Brown comment. Someone asked about Noah Brown. What made Noah Brown good at Ohio State?
Noah Brown's an extremely smart football player that's very skilled. He's a big receiver that can really move. He can run. He's unbelievable in and out of his breaks. I'll never forget Mario Cristobal and I sitting at St. John Pope, whatever fucking numeral after that, high school in New Jersey, watching Noah Brown work out. And I walked away and offered him immediately, and Mario did not. And I still to this day cannot figure out what the fuck was he watching. And the difference was, when I went and watched a kid, I could just fucking offer him. And Urban trusted that kid was going to be a good player because I said he was. At Alabama, this motherfucker, Mario Cristobal, sat there with a video camera the whole time recording the whole workout. And so he obviously had to send that to receiver coaches and Nick Saban, and they had to approve it. And it was like, I'm sitting here like, what the fuck did you guys just watch? This kid is, I mean, I thought he was going to be a tight end, but he ended up staying low enough weight that he could play receiver. Right. But he's got unbelievable ball skills. He gets in and out of breaks really, really well. And he's a big physical fucker. And you just look at him. This somebody's what? He went out in 2016. So 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. He's in year 7 and getting 5 catches for the Cowboys. Like, when they got CeeDee Lamb's, you know, they have a legit receiver
core. Mr. Reliable.
And like, this somebody's, he's going to have a 10-year career in the NFL. Just imagine if he didn't break his leg. That's all I could tell you. If he didn't break his leg at Ohio State, he'd be in the conversation with every other receiver you talk about at Ohio State. But he broke his leg and then was, I'll say, 80% himself his last year at Ohio State with the most dysfunctional fucking coordinator and offense I've ever seen. If he didn't break his leg, I'm just telling you, you would talk about Noah Brown totally differently in his college career.
Like Michael Thomas. Easy Eye, thank you for the tube before we get out of here. Do you see Bama getting a new offensive coordinator next year?
Well, you know, Saban doesn't take kindly to poor performances or poor coordinators. So he is absolutely that Bill O'Brien walks in his office and it's like a sauna. Saban has the heat so high on him. So he's either going to get Bill O'Brien to enhance and do a better job, and then maybe not, or he's going to get rid of him, because Saban doesn't have time for mediocrity. And he certainly will get a new offensive coordinator if shit doesn't turn around this year.
And that would be kind of the first miss at OC that Saban's had in a long time. It feels like he doesn't fire offensive coordinators. It feels like he gets them jobs elsewhere.
Yeah, I think and you know, I've touted Saban as why he's so great as his staff hires. And our guy Cody, who's a Bama fan that is one of our generals in our group chat, he said Saban has missed twice. It was Tosh Lapoy at DC in whatever year that was, 2015-ish, mm-hmm. and then Bill O'Brien this year. And that's probably about it. You look at everyone else he's had, and those are the two where you're like, he might have missed one there, but it doesn't take long now. Mm-hmm. Tosh Lapoy wasn't the D coordinator for 4 years.
Does not take long. All right, Menace Army, I got one mission for you as we get out of things. Hop on Twitter and type in, say, I'm hearing Coach Zach Smith has been reached out to for the Nebraska job. Let's get this train rolling and see if we can get a major media entity to pick it up and see if they acknowledge it. But I got nothing else, Zach.
All right, real, appreciate go do everybody. That, Menace Army. Go do it. Menace out. Oh.